Welcome to the Golden Age of Comic Books. It is August 9th, 2005, and this is the Golden Age of Comic Books. Welcome everybody to the show. This is Bill Jourdain, your host, and we are very glad you're here. Got a good show coming up today. We're going to talk about some interesting books that have come out regarding the Golden Age of Comics. We're going to talk about an old magazine related to the Golden Age of Comics. And then we're going to talk about the Golden Age Captain America and Bucky, how that character progressed throughout the Golden Age of Comics and his revival into the Silver Age of Comics. But before we get started, I wanted to first thank Bruce Rosenberger of the Comics Cast podcast for his nice comments about the Golden Age of Comics podcast in his last show. Bruce has only done a few podcasts, but is doing a good job talking about comic books generally. And I appreciate it, Bruce, all the kind words you had to say about the Golden Age of Comics in your podcast. If you're interested in checking out Bruce's podcast, you can go to comiccast.libsyn.com. That's comics with a K and cast with a K. comiccast.libsyn.com. Check out Bruce's podcast. I'm sure he would appreciate it. I thought I'd start out talking today about an old magazine that relates to the Golden Age of Comics. It's not a comic book itself, but a very interesting glimpse into some of the history of the Golden Age of Comics. And this is the Family Circle magazine from April 17th, 1942. Now, how did this magazine have anything to do with the Golden Age of Comics? Well, let me talk about that a little bit. This magazine had an article in it by a gentleman named H. Dyson Carter. And the name of the article was, "Are the Comics Bad for Children?" Now, if you're familiar with the Frederick Wortham articles that appeared in the Ladies' Home Journal in the 1950s, late 1940s, early 1950s that we talked about in our podcast regarding EC Comics, you would think the answer to that question is probably going to be, yes, comics are bad for children. We don't need to have our children reading them. But if you read Mr. Carter's article in 1942, he comes to just the opposite conclusions. And he stated, in fact, that comic books of the day occupy a rightful and harmless place in your child's scheme of things, that juvenile taste in entertainment changes very little from generation to generation, and that, to sum it up, parents are taking the comic book craze more seriously than it deserves. So, Mr. Dyson Carter gave a very glowing recommendation of comic books in the April 17, 1942 Family Circle magazine. But what's really neat about this magazine is not so much what it says, but what it shows. And on the cover of the Family Circle for April 17, 1942, we have Batman and Robin along with Charlie Chaplin appearing on the cover. Now, they don't appear together in the same artistic endeavor on the cover. There's a photograph of Charlie Chaplin from his movie The Gold Rush. And on the bottom right of the cover of the Family Circle magazine, there is an image lifted from the cover of Batman number 9, showing Batman and Robin. Inside of the Family Circle magazine, where the article appears that we were talking about, there are some other images from comic books that are kind of interesting. They have a picture of the Golden Age Flash lifted from the cover of All Flash number 1. They have a picture of the Golden Age Superman lifted from the World's Fair comic book for 1940, where he appeared with Batman and Robin on the cover. They have a copy or a picture of the Golden Age Wonder Woman from the cover of Sensation Comics number 6. There are also a couple of images of Hop Harrigan and Buck Rogers. I'm not sure what the source of those were. Maybe one of our listeners can enlighten me on that. But pretty interesting historical information showing you what was going on in the world of comics in 1942 at the height of the superhero explosion. Very interesting. I would suggest that if you can find a copy of the magazine and read the article, it would certainly give you that historical perspective. If you go to the show notes at goldenagecomics.org to our blog page on Libsyn, you'll find a link to a picture of this cover. Check it out. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. Now, when I was out at the San Diego Comic-Con International a while back, I picked up a book that I thought was really kind of cool, and this leads right in with the EC Comics discussion we had a few weeks ago. This book is called Foul Play, and it has been put together by Grant Geisman, and it involves a pictorial reference of a lot of the great artwork of the EC artist back during their heyday in the late 40s and early 50s. And if you go through this book, it's an oversized trade paperback type book, and it contains artwork from 20 different artists, all of the main EC artists, and then some of the others that drew for EC back during the heyday of that company. And it has some complete stories in it. In fact, it actually has an unpublished story that was going to appear in the photo fiction magazine. This story was never published, but it was drawn by Al Williamson, and they pasted the text onto the pictures here in this book. Kind of interesting to see that, a story that was never published. And it also contains a lot of other historical references to the EC Comics company during the point in time that the company was in its heyday, and then as it wound down in the mid-1950s and then began into the publication of Mad Magazine. So if you're interested in a more historical glimpse into the world of EC Comics during the late 1940s and early 1950s, pick up a copy of this book, Foul Play, by Grant Geisman. I picked it up at the Bud Plant booth at San Diego, so I'm sure that you can find it by going to Bud Plant's website. And the book was about $30, and certainly well worth it for all of the fine artwork that's recreated here, reproduced here, and all of the other interesting historical tidbits that are contained in the text as authored by Mr. Geisman. Well, let's shift gears now and talk about the Golden Age Captain America and his sidekick, Bucky. Captain America was first introduced to the world in Captain America Comics number 1 in March of 1941. He was created by the team of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby and continued on throughout the Golden Age of Comics and on into the mid-1950s. Captain America was designed to be a propaganda character to support the efforts of the United States in beginning to get involved in the war in Europe, and then, of course, after December 7th, 1941, getting involved in World War II. Captain America was a crime fighter with superpowers, and he spent most of his time in the early years fighting the Nazis, fighting the Japanese on behalf of the United States. Of course, most of you have probably seen depictions of Captain America in his red, white, and blue costume with his red, white, and blue shield, certainly one of the more patriotic superheroes from the Golden Age of comics. And as many of the superheroes did during the Golden Age, thanks to Batman and Robin, Captain America had a sidekick, and his name was Bucky, also known as Bucky Barnes, and Bucky also wore a red, white, and blue costume and accompanied Captain America in his adventures throughout the Golden Age. Now, how did Captain America get his start? What was his origin? Well, we learned all of that in Captain America number 1. Captain America number 1 tells us the story of a young man named Steve Rogers. Steve Rogers was what I would call the 100-pound weakling, the very typical 100-pound weakling. In fact, he was so meek and mild that he could not get through the draft process to become a regular foot soldier during World War II. So he was drafted to take part in an experiment where a formula was going to be tested to see whether or not his physical skills could be augmented and his mental skills could be augmented so that he would become a super soldier, or as was stated in the early story, a super agent. And there was a professor named Reinstein, probably designed to sound like Einstein, and Professor Reinstein had created this formula that he was going to test on Steve Rogers. And so one afternoon, a number of military personnel, the head of the FBI, and others were present at this experiment. Interestingly, Franklin Roosevelt, the President of the United States, made an appearance early in this story. But they appeared in a secret laboratory along with a number of other individuals who were going to watch this experiment. Dr. Reinstein injected Steve Rogers with the Super Soldier formula, as it was later known, although it was not actually called this in the first story, and an amazing transformation took place. Rogers changed from the 100-pound weakling to a very muscular, fit individual almost instantly. And Reinstein, during the course of the transformation, stated that his cells were growing by millions of times, and that his brain cells were also growing by millions of times, and that his intelligence was growing exponentially, as were his physical skills and strength, and so on and so forth. And so after the experiment was concluded, and it appeared that Steve Rogers had become the super agent, a Nazi spy who was hiding in the audience watching the experiment pulled out his handgun and opened fire through the glass, shooting Dr. Reinstein, who was holding the only vial of the Super Soldier formula. The vial, of course, went crashing to the ground and was destroyed. And as it turned out, so went the formula, so went Dr. Reinstein. He perished, and the only location where the formula had been committed to memory was in Dr. Reinstein's brain. And because he had not written down the formula was lost, and the only super soldier that could be created was Steve Rogers. Steve Rogers became Captain America later in the story, and first donned his Captain America costume with his triangular shield, and was assigned to be a private at Camp Lehigh in the United States Army, where he first encountered Bucky Barnes, who through an accident discovered that Steve Rogers was actually Captain America. Once he discovered the secret, Captain America made Bucky his sidekick, and the rest, as they say, is history. And they went on to fight the Nazis and the Japanese and the spies and the ghouls and the zombies and everybody else that Marvel could come up with during those early years. And if you read some of the early Captain America stories, they weren't just limited to fighting the Nazis or the Japanese or World War II enemies, but there were a lot of stories with a horror slant to them, somewhat gruesome, and all of them authored by Joe Simon and penciled by Jack Kirby. So really interesting stuff, and the development of the character was fun to watch. The main villain in most of the Captain America stories, or at least the one who became his chief nemesis over the years, was, of course, the Red Skull. And the Red Skull made his first appearance in Captain America number 1 in a story that was called The Riddle of the Red Skull. The Red Skull was a Nazi agent and ran around throughout the story murdering various high-ranking military officers and attempted to murder Captain America and Bucky. And at the end of the story, it was revealed that the Red Skull was actually an individual named Maxon, who owned an aircraft company called Maxon Aircraft and was, in fact, an agent of the Nazi government. And he apparently dies at the end of the story. And, of course, those of you who follow Captain America throughout the Golden Age and the Silver Age and even into the modern age know that the Red Skull, of course, did not perish and has remained the chief nemesis and the main villain in the world of Captain America over the years. Now, in issue number 1 of Captain America in March of 1941, Captain America's costume was pretty much the way it would end up throughout the Golden Age and on into the modern age of comics. However, in issue number 2, a slight change was made to Captain America's appearance. First of all, his mask that had only covered his head and face in issue number 1 was now extended down to cover his neck. And the major change, of course, was his shield. His shield, which had been a triangular shield in the first issue of Captain America, became a round shield in issue number 2 and thereafter throughout the history of the Captain America character. So Captain America, pretty much starting with issue number 2, took on the appearance that he would hold throughout the rest of the Golden Age of comics, on through the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and into the Modern Age of comics. Now, as I mentioned, Captain America was a propaganda character for the World War II effort of the United States, and certainly that was the intent of this character. He was utilized to promote the United States war effort and to fight the Nazis and to fight the Japanese. And he did so, and of course, at some point in time, in 1945, the war ended, and the life of Captain America and Bucky, of course, had to shift at that point in time. Now, the issue number 41 of Captain America Comics, that's the August 1944 issue, contained the last Japanese World War II cover in the Captain America run. And issue number 47, which was the June 1945 issue of Captain America, contained the last German or Nazi World War II cover. And so as Captain America shifted his focus from the war, he, of course, became a crime fighter, like many of the superheroes did, and simply fought crime in the stories without the angle that it was a part of the war effort. In issue number 59 of Captain America Comics, this was the November 1946 issue, the origin of Captain America was retold. And it's a really nice cover. If you take a look at it, you'll see that it has in the background a picture of Steve Rogers and Bucky Barnes in their civilian identities stepping forward into full-color pictures of them in their crime-fighting garb, Captain America in his costume and Bucky in his costume. And then as the title progressed, other characters made appearances in the stories, Asbestos Lady and others. Also, you had stories in the Captain America book with the Human Torch and the Submariner. All of the Marvel main characters appeared in those stories. And as I mentioned in our team-up segment of the Golden Age of Comics podcast, Captain America also appeared in the All-Winners squad as a member of that team throughout the Golden Age of Comics. And you can find those adventures in All-Winners comics. And the team-up issues of All-Winners comics, as I mentioned, were in the later issues. Then there was a shift in the focus of Captain America Comics towards the end of its run. The last two issues of Captain America Comics, issues 74 and 75, actually had different titles. And the titles of those two issues were Captain America's Weird Tales. Now, if you listen to our segment or our podcast on EC Comics, you can probably figure out when and why the title was changed at this time. The superheroes were slowly fading away during this period of time, and the horror and crime comics of the day were rapidly gaining prominence on the newsstands. And so the October 1949 issue, number 74, called Captain America's Weird Tales, contained tales of horror that were very similar to some of the horror comics that were beginning to become more and more prevalent at that time. And then with issue number 75, this was the February 1950 issue, a pretty big gap between number 74 and 75. The title remained Captain America's Weird Tales, but there were no Captain America stories in this issue. In fact, Captain America did not appear in these stories, and the magazine contained only horror stories. So that was the very last issue of Captain America Comics during this period of time. And of course, it was the crime and horror focus of Marvel and Atlas that took the stage, and superheroes were gone. And as I mentioned in our podcast about the Human Torch, a little bit later, there was a revival of some of these heroes that had been so prominent and so important to Marvel during the Golden Age. And in 1954, Atlas published three more issues of Captain America Comics, number 76, number 77, and number 78. Number 76 was the May 1954 issue, and now Captain America is not fighting Nazis, he's not fighting the Japanese, he's not really fighting the criminals. And if you look at the cover of Captain America, number 76, it tells you exactly what Captain America is going to be doing, because the title of that magazine states that Captain America is now a commie smasher, and Captain America has been revived to fight the communists. And so in issues number 76, 77, and 78, Captain America and Bucky are commie smashers, and they go after the communists who are so much of a focus of the United States during this period in our history. Now, all three of those issues, 76, 77, and 78, have cover art by John Romita, who, of course, many of you know as the artist who took over Spider-Man from Steve Ditko in the 1960s. Now, the last issue, number 78, was the last issue of Captain America in the Golden Age of Comics. Not only was this the last appearance of Captain America and Bucky in the Golden Age, but it was also the last appearance of the Human Torch until the Silver Age, and also the last appearance of the Submariner in the Silver Age. And I mentioned the Human Torch came back in Fantastic Four Annual, I believe it was number 4, and the Submariner was revived in Fantastic Four, number 4. So what happened to Captain America? He went away in September of 1954, and we know, of course, that he is one of the mainstream characters for Marvel Comics today. So how did he come back, and when did he come back? Well, he had a, what I'll call a false start, in November of 1963. And then the November 1963 issue of Strange Tales, that was issue number 114, he fought the Human Torch, but not the Golden Age Human Torch, the Fantastic Four Human Torch, Johnny Storm. And throughout the story, it appeared that Captain America was back and perhaps had taken on a life of crime. But at the end of that story, it was revealed that Captain America was not actually the Captain America from the Golden Age of Comics, but it was a villain called the Acrobat who had dressed up in a Captain America costume and was not Captain America at all. So the Human Torch fought the Acrobat in that story, even though it was, in appearance, the Golden Age Captain America. But we didn't have to wait too long for the real Captain America to come back. And in March of 1964, he was back. And that took place in the issue of Avengers number 4 that many of you have probably read. It's been reprinted many times by Marvel. And in that issue, Captain America was found floating in the water by the Avengers who were on a submarine. He was brought into their submarine. He was revived, and throughout the course of the story, ultimately decided to become a member of the Avengers. It was interesting, in that story, we also had an appearance of the Submariner, who in fact had taken the Captain America, who had been encased in ice and had been worshipped by a number of natives in an ice land, an ice area, had taken that that big idol that they had been worshipping and threw it in the water, and of course the ice melted, and Captain America was sought out and ultimately found by the Avengers. So a very interesting way to revive a Golden Age character, and how to explain why he was back after all of those years of being absent, and why he didn't age during all those years. He was in frozen and suspended animation. So the Captain America character certainly was one of the most vivid and important characters of the Golden Age of Comics. If you're interested in reading some of the early Captain America adventures, they have been reprinted by Marvel on a couple of occasions. Back a number of years ago, Marvel produced a two-issue or two-book slipcase set that was called Captain America: The Classic Years. Volume 1 reprinted Captain America Comics 1 through 5, and Volume 2 reprinted Captain America Comics numbers 6 through 10. This slipcase set had a price originally of $75, and today it's out of print and sells for a lot more than that in nice shape. I've seen them selling on the internet for anywhere from $150 to $250, so It's an expensive way to read the early Captain America adventures, but a less expensive way is to find the same books that were released in 2000 by Marvel in trade paperbacks. Volume 1 contained issues 1 through 6 of Captain America comics, and Volume 2 contained Volume 6 through 10. I've seen them on various websites that sell comics-related material. You might even be able to find them on Amazon. I'm not sure if they're still in print, but they're certainly a less expensive alternative to the slipcase set that was published by Marvel. Other Golden Age Captain America stories have been reprinted over the years in various sources, and a great place to look for reprint information is the Grand Comic Book Database Project website at comics.org. And there are lots of other websites out there related to the Golden Age Captain America. Well, that's our show for this week. I hope you've learned a little bit about the Golden Age Captain America, Bucky and the Red Skull, certainly one of the more interesting characters and one of the most memorable characters of the Golden Age of comic books. As always, if you're interested in learning more about the Golden Age Captain America or any other Golden Age character, check out the Grand Comic Book Database Project website at comics.org. This website is a tremendous wealth of information about the Golden Age of comics, containing story information, cover art, and other information, as well as the Silver Age, Bronze Age, and Modern Ages of comics. Just one of the greatest resources on the web for comic books. Also, don't forget to support the Actor Comic Fund at actorcomicfund.org. I've mentioned that in every one of our podcasts since I attended the Heroes Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina earlier this summer. Really is a great and worthwhile fund to assist those who brought us the Golden Age of comics. Also, I want to mention our website. Please visit the Golden Age of Comics website at goldenagecomics.org. I appreciate every one of you who has visited the website and has visited our blog page at goldenagecomics.libsyn.com. Got a lot of nice emails from folks with comments about the podcast, with ideas for future shows, and with a lot of other good information about the Golden Age of comics. So I would encourage all of you to visit the website. And as always, I love the emails, and I will do my best to incorporate information you provide me in our upcoming shows. Well, thank you again for joining us this week on the Golden Age of Comic Books. I hope everybody has a wonderful week, and I look forward to talking to each of you next time.